So that's when I started up the telemarketing office. And again, and the funny thing about it, when I was running the telemarketing office legitimately, I was making about like, $15,000-$20,000 a week. You feel me? So when I started doing it illegally, now we're making like, $50,000-$100,000 a week. You feel me? And that's when it kind of like, okay, wow. But of course, that was short-lived, got jammed up. But just like anything, when you taste of it, and then I was like, okay, hell no, let me go ahead and run it up again, But again, I've never really gone into the intricate details. And the crazy part about it, although the statute of limitations are done on the case, but had I really been convicted for all of the crimes, financial crimes I've done and everything, man, I would have been buried under the jail because, they never catch you for everything that you do.
It was, man. It's scary for people that's watching this. Y'all know, man, this is my first bid. You get out the bus, they strip you naked. They, the CEO there, he's waiting to slap the first person to get out of line. You feel me? And you just intimidated. By the time you go through the whole intake and everything, I had a little hair then. You feel me? So they shave your hair off and everything. So you go inside the dorm, then you like, damn, it's here, right? And I think I see my first fight like the second day or something like that. Then it's like, okay, man. Then I see my first stabbing like the following week. Throughout the 9-year bid, I end up seeing somebody get killed, somebody got raped. I've seen, gang initiations. I've seen all that dumb stuff. You know what I'm saying? I've seen COs get it.
All right, good afternoon. This is State of Florida versus Stephen Testa with multiple cases before the
court. Hey, dog, so what's your name? Where you from? And go ahead and just tell me your background, dog. Tell me your upbringing, what led you to prison, and just go from there.
Hey, what's going on? What's going on? Thank you. Well, my name is Wesley Paul, a.k.a. the Blueprint Mastermind. Yeah, your favorite South Florida Zoe, born and raised here in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Man. Okay, to answer your story, your question there, I did 12 years. Got incarcerated November 18th, 2010. 2010, got out in 2000. No, I didn't do 12. I did 9. I'm sorry. Got out October 18th, 2019. Offenses all white collar crimes. First degree organized fraud, money laundering. And unlawful use of stolen identity. To put it all in a nutshell for the viewers out there, I had a boiler room operation. I was a ringleader of several telemarketing offices, which we'll go into. But, now that I'm out, I've been out since, again, 2020. We're in 2024. So these past 3.5, 4 years, I have turned my life around to being a serial entrepreneur, a podcaster, a leader, a father, and, here to just make a difference. I have a beautiful family, a beautiful girl, and just trying to be an activist now as far as entrepreneurship is concerned and, try to make a difference out here nowadays because, final point I want to say is, out of the 9 years I did, right, I realized, like, damn, had I had the same mindset that I have now in there, I would have never done that time, right? So it's all about, turning a negative into a positive. So it's funny how where you don't put your energy into negative things. If you put it into positive things, how far you can go. So that's sort of a little introduction into myself right there.
Yeah, thank you, bro. That's fire. All right, so just leaning into your childhood, bro. What did like childhood look like for you? And just like your young adolescent years, your family, were you involved in sports? And maybe like kind of take us into if you started like getting into trouble and how that process happened.
Wow, good question. First of all, my ex's mother always told me this. She's always said, you have a wine attitude. You have a wine appetite but a beer budget, right? So, in other words, I've always had an expensive taste, but I just never had a way to be able to get the finer things that I wanted, right? So, to answer your question, growing up, I grew up dirt poor, like most people in the inner city. Again, I was born and raised here in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Single mother, three kids, dad left when we was young. So she was forced to raise all three of us, working two, three jobs and everything. I got my first, no, my first job was a bagger in Winn-Dixie, right? So, but before I get into my first job, all throughout school, been very bad student. I'll be honest, not just behavior wise, but academically, I just didn't give school much attention. You know, I barely graduated high school. I had to go to summer school just to walk this, just to get my diploma. So that gives you a little bit of idea. But I got my first job as a bagger as Winn-Dixie, worked there for 6 months. Then my second job was a telemarketer at a sales office selling cruise vacations not too far from here. I got that job as a senior in high school. The beautiful, what's very important about that was it was full commission. You know, no hourly salary. So basically, I was getting paid for $100 for each sale that I made. I think my first week I did 10 sales. That's $1,000. So I was locked in after that. And instantly I knew in that moment that you earn what you make. You're right. If you came in there, you didn't hustle, you wasn't going to make anything, right? So I had the entrepreneurial spirit since then. And that was my first job. That was my second job. I had that all throughout my senior year. I've worked there for like 3-4 years. And after that, that mushroomed into me opening up my own telemarketing office at the age of 24, which, you know, I've never shared this on camera, you know, outside of a deposition with police officers, right? But, you know, the specifics of the crime was basically I learned how to flip timeshares, how to sell timeshares from a friend, end up opening up my own business doing so. Me and a partner end up starting up the business. After a year, we separated. I opened up my own office at 25. And I had that for about a year until, you know, greed got the best of me. So started end up double, triple, quadruple charging clients' credit cards. And that's where I caught my first charge out of the series of offenses that I got incarcerated for. And then over the years until my final arrest, I was just operating boiler rooms and everything like that, running it up, you know. And for those who don't believe me, again, this is all public information. And got to the point where I was sentenced to, you know, 120 months followed by, you know, 10 years probation and paying $250,000 in restitution. And one thing I can say, yes, I made a lot of money throughout my criminal run, you know, but I was high in ignorance, high in misjudgment and everything like that. And, you know, now that I'm out, you know, I take my same talents as far as knowing how to get money, because, again, I no longer have that, you know, beer budget. Right. So we, you know, our budget matches our wine taste. Right. So I just now take all of my talents and efforts and put it into positivity by putting a platform together of my podcast, Respect My Blueprint, starting up my own tech company, Uptrend Credit, where it's a credit monitoring company where we allow consumers to be able to monitor as well as upgrade their credit. And also being a mentor, educating, you know, young inner city kids on the importance of personal finance, financial literacy. Because one final point I want to say, I think we talked about this a little bit. My last 2 years of my bid, I was in work release, 2 years of work release. Most people who are aware of this, you know, before you get back into society, the Department of Corrections allow you to reacclimate by putting you a program called work release. I was in this program the last 2 years. I was working as a server, a part-time server at a restaurant. All my tips and all my checks, I was saving it against the rules of Department of Correction, because you can't save your money. But I'm cuffing my money. I had a Wells Fargo bank account. I'm cuffing it. So I took in all last 2 years. I'm taking my money. I'm paying off my credit. I'm saving my money. So I got out on the streets with a 700 plus credit score and like two credit cards. I have a Capital One and a Discover credit card. And right there, that set the stage for me, because 4 months after that pandemic came, I'm locked in the house, but I had good credit. I said, you know what? Since I was able to educate myself and build up my credit, let me do the same for others. And after that, it's been, you know, story's been history.
That's fire, bro. So let me backtrack some. Whenever you were in high school working at the telemarketing spot, mm-hmm. did you ever get like distracted and like detoured by like street lifestyle at all? Were you like smoking and drinking and partying or selling any dope and all that too? Or were you just focused on the legal hustle?
Well, okay, when I was, you know, I wasn't outside like that, but I was influenced outside. Of course, you know, we influenced by hip hop, we influenced by our culture, you know, the way our fashion is and everything, right? So of course I wanted the J's. Of course I wanted the back then it was Mecca and Nietzsche and everything, like, of course, right? You know, but I wasn't on the block slanging, I wasn't toting no guns. I that wasn't my forte. Really, in high school, how I was getting it, again, I wasn't bad behavior, I was bad academically. So I played JV football my freshman year. I said, you know what, forget sports. You know, nah, I'm not talented enough to make it to the pros. But once I got that job, and then my mom forced me to pay for my own clothes. So mind you, I want the J's. Since I want the $150 J's, I got to put 10 hours into the telemarketing job to get 2 sales to be able to get the J's. So necessarily that was, I guess, it's funny how they say money is the root of all evil. I guess in my situation that what it was the case, because me not having everything and me having to hustle to get my own money by working, it was like, damn, in order for me to get the things I really want, the fast cars, the money, the women, the jewelry and everything, I got to find a way to make more money. All right. But again, I'm not too much of the criminal that's outside. Let me go ahead and figure out a way. So that's when I started up the telemarketing office. And again, and the funny thing about it, when I was running the telemarketing office legitimately, I was making about like, you know, $15,000-$20,000 a week. You feel me? So when I started doing it illegally, now we're making like, you know what I'm saying, $50,000-$100,000 a week. You feel me? And that's when it kind of like, okay, wow. But of course, that was short-lived, got jammed up. But just like anything, when you taste of it, and then I got it, it's like, okay, hell no, let me go ahead and run it up again. You know, but again, I've never really gone into the intricate details. And the crazy part about it, although the statute of limitations are done on the case, but, you know, had I really been convicted for all of the crimes, financial crimes I've done, and everything, man, I would have been buried under the jail because, you know, they never catch you for everything that you do. You feel me? But
yeah, okay. And I think it's dope, too, how, like, while you were at the telemarketing spot, you learned the game. And then while you learned the game, you went and started your own. Just for, like, once again, bro, you don't have to answer this. I'm not trying to, like, ask police questions. But this, out of understanding of the charges, right? So whenever you began to like, so pretty much you went to prison for just like double swiping or triple swiping these cards whenever they bought a timeshare. You just kept running it up on their card. Double, triple charging them. And that's why you went to prison for that. That's considered fraud?
No, matter of fact, to tell you the truth, again, I wouldn't say honored, but I don't mind sharing this. All right, so the first one, mind you, again, I'm 24, 25 years old. I have this telemarketing office. So to make a long story short, a hurricane had passed during one of those years. I forgot what it's. This is like 06 or 05 or something. Hurricane passed. We lose power. When we lose power, we end up losing our merchant account because all of our clients couldn't get a hold of us. So my neighbor, my business neighbor, like we have this office here, there's a neighbor next to me. He opened up the same business as me because he was jealous. He was racist, right? So when he opened up the same business as me, I was like, oh, okay, wow, you know, I'm going to get my get back. I'm going to just wait. So when I lost my merchant account and everything, I said, okay, let me go ahead. And I went up to him and said, let me go ahead and process all my transactions through your merchant account. Of course, he got the greed in his head. He was like, yeah, no problem. So as we first month, we're processing transactions, no problem. But, you know, I said, again, greed got the best of me. We started double, triple, quadrupling charges through his merchant account. You know, he's paying me out unaware, unbeknownst to all of the, you know, fuckery, a.k.a. that I got going on in the background. So he ends up, you know, clients end up canceling, charging back. He gets irate, you know, and then boom, month later, BSO raised my office. So that was the first instant. I bonded out. Then after that, I started doing some other scams and everything like that with like PayPal and other, you know, crap to kind of like survive and make money, right? But then I went back into timeshares again. But because I lost my merchant account, I was just having clients wire me the money. So for 2 years, basically, I was just opening up fake offices, all throughout the country in different states and everything like that. And I would just have clients wire me the money for to sell their timeshare, which to put it more, put it better perspective, the whole scam was basically I was the broker. I was the middleman between somebody selling their timeshare and somebody wanting to buy a timeshare. So I would call the seller and say, hey, I have a buyer. They're willing to pay you 10%, but you got to pay me the transaction fee, the closing costs and everything like that is 10% of the transaction, which is the normal transaction is like $100,000, $50,000. So 10% of that is $5,000, $10,000. So you'll get somebody to wire you $5,000 for the transaction. You tell them you're going to close within 30 days. And after 30 days, it's bye-bye. You don't hear from me no more. So.
Dang. Okay, so two questions, right? So whenever you were running the, like you were doubling and tripling like the accounts through his merchant account, I'm assuming because you wouldn't do that on your own merchant account because obviously the paper trail will go back to you immediately. So yeah. You assume that doing it through him, like he wouldn't be aware of it or wouldn't like paper trail, yeah. It couldn't prove you wrong. So what happened? So whenever the feds ran down on you, so what, did he like turn state witness and like make a statement saying that those were your merchant accounts that he became a witness like in your case?
Again, it was to answer your question specifically, he knew, when everything was ran on his account and then the client started canceling everything, he the one that initiated to get the cops to raid my office and everything. Was he aware I was double, triple charging? No, he wasn't aware. Was I aware that this was going to come back on me? I thought it would more go to go back on him than me, right? So to answer your question, right? And plus, I'm young, and that's why I said, I guess, sometimes when you think you're so smart, but you're really stupid, right? So at that point, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to get back at you. You know, I'm thinking I'm smart, I'm going to just go run it all up. But I'm so naive not realizing, damn, this shit could come back on me too, right? So at that point, that's kind of the situation what it is. I just had, ain't have a fuck attitude, you know? So it was just sort of like get back from me in a way.
So the feds ran down on you, right?
Yeah. No, it was BSO. Okay. BSO ran down on me. Actually, the only reason
that I... What is BSO? Excuse me.
I'm sorry. Broward Sheriff's Office, which, okay. You know, that's where the office was located here in Broward County. And so the Sheriff's Office here in Broward County raided my office. Everybody, you know, went home. Nobody got locked up. It was just me because I had an unrelated situation. I had a firearm with me. I was the only one that got locked up, but... That was it, pretty
okay, much. So for that prison bid, what was the end up? Like, what did you end up charged with? How many years did you get? And then what prison did you go to first?
That particular instance that happened in 08, I bonded out. So I bonded out, and it's funny, I caught three more charges, like, because that happened, like, in 08, right? Yeah, I said 08. I got locked up in 2010, so for 2 years, from 08, I was out on bond, right? And I was catching more felonies. So that particular story that I just shared with you that happened in 08, I bonded out 2 years after that. I caught more felonies until 2010, going to court for the 08 case and everything. They just said, you know what, you're a menace. We're going to now put a warrant for you, and you got to sit and everything.
So and those other cases, those were like the PayPal, other fraud type stuff you were talking
exactly,
about?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so what were you, with all those cases, what were you convicted with at the end? How much time did you get?
I caught 120 months. The final disposition was 120 months, followed by 10 years probation and $250,000 in restitution. The offenses was first-degree organized fraud, 2 counts of money laundering, and also unlawful use of personal identification.
And the feds didn't pick that up?
No, it was actually – my case was very interesting. Quick, I was supposed to actually have a lesser time than what I caught. I open plead in front of my judge, and I had a paid lawyer, high paid lawyer and everything like that. He told me, don't open plea. Again, me thinking I'm too smart. Oh, it's, you know, nonviolent crime. It's my first time going to prison. You know, I'm thinking, damn, she's going to bless me with probation. So, you know, when you open plea, you sitting here explaining yourself to the judge, asking for remorse and mercy. As I'm trying to ask for mercy, she's not giving me no eye contact. She's basically completely shows, you know, no compassion or empathy towards me. And as I'm talking, it's like as I'm talking right now in my head, I'm like, damn, I think I fucked up, right? So as I'm, as soon as she, it's like she couldn't wait till I was done. As soon as I was done, okay, Mr. Paul, yeah, the court denies her, and we sentence you to, you know, to the sentence I just read off. And that moment right there, my life changed. Because think, I want to put this in perspective. I thought I was going home that day. So think about when you, one day you think you're going home to now learning you're going to spend 120, you know what I'm saying? So it was like, damn. And that was a life-changing moment. You know, of course, throughout what's very, very interesting about my story, because of that, when I got to the chain gang, I end up becoming a law clerk. So for the, you know, I guess half the time in my bid, I'm a law clerk. I'm fighting my case. I got myself back to court pro se, gave some time back and everything like that. Of course, helping other inmates on with their DRs, got other inmates back to court and everything. And me doing that, I wrote a book in prison. I educated myself and everything. So that kind of like prepped me for, you know, the person I am right now and what I got going on. So, you know, it's funny, this whole interview, you know, out of all the negatives that I just did, prison, I tell this, although I have an issue with the amount of time I did, going to prison was the biggest blessing for me, man. It completely changed my life around because, again, I was able to know the law. I was able to educate myself, enlighten myself, empower myself, you know, met some of the smartest individuals that walk this planet on earth. I've met prosecutors. I've met, you know, ex-lawyers, you know. And when I say prosecutor, yeah, I actually met a prosecutor that got locked up. He was in our unit. So engineers, doctors, you know, a lot of these pill mill doctors, I sat and had conversations with them. You see, like, these people are smart. So, again, I've met a lot of smart people in prison. So prison changed my life for the good, because you realize, okay, what's the evil to stay away from? And also take all that and just turn it into a light, turn it into positivity.
That's fire, bro. All right, let me rewind to some, just for clarity. So whenever you open pled, what was the initial like plea deal that
5 years?
5 years.
And I'm in three. And I had like 2 years in.
That would have been like, time served. You would have done a year.
I would have done a year on the pound and got out on work release.
Oh man. Okay.
Yeah, man. Right,
so what? So you went to FDOC.
I went to South Florida Reception Center.
Okay.
And because I was went in to become a law clerk, they kept me there.
Okay.
So I was a law clerk there for about 5 years until I got caught with a phone. When I got caught with a phone, they shipped me to Okeechobee.
All right. Yeah. Just lean into some of your prison experience a little bit, and then we'll focus on like the release and the transition now. Hold on, little question about the prison bid. All right. So, I mean, as far, obviously, right when you caught your time, you were committed to like studying law so that way you could fight your case. Mm-hmm. But was that like an immediate response for you? Like right when you went up the road, you were like, nah, I got to learn law. I got to fight my case. I got to come back home. Or was it like you were depressed, you were upset, you wanted to wild out with violence or whatever, and like explain how you navigated your prison time. Some people go to prison, they bang, they rob, they get caught up in gambling, or oh, there's a million ways you can do time. So explain that process for you and how you did time.
Well, first thing first, I knew I wasn't going to go in there and being no, you know, big dick, let me go ahead and fight everybody. Nah, that wasn't, I knew that was not the case. So to answer your question, I said, nah, I'm going to fight this. I'm not doing all of this. You know, although I end up doing all of the prison sentence that I was sentenced, right? But I said I did get a little bit of remedy. But to answer your question, I just said, hell nah, I'm not taking all of this. So as soon as I got there, they put you in the kitchen. You know, they either go put you on inside grounds or the kitchen, right? That's the first job they put you on. So I'm working in the kitchen until I think my direct appeal, I lost it, you know, because you got 30 days to file a direct at 3,800. I lost that. As soon as I lost that, I said, nah, man, I want to be a law clerk. I want to put in for it, you know. And then I put in for it, and they just kept me there. So it was just two things, working out and studying the law. You know, they tell you to stay away from the three G's, you know, gays, gambling, and gangs, right? You know, so you know, they tell you that first quarter. So I already knew. I was like, okay, all three of them, that don't even pertain to me. You feel me? Although I did learn how to play poker in prison. You But outside of that, you know, yeah. But to answer your question, now, I knew I wasn't going to wild out. I knew from jump I was going to do something to cut some of this time down. You feel me? So, and that's what it is. I just had my mindset on a whole different lane and everything. And, you know, to bring a little entertainment in the situation, you know, prison was, man, it's scary for people that's watching this. Y'all know, man, this is my first bid. You get out the bus, they strip you naked. They, you know, the CEO there, he's waiting to slap the first person to get out of line. You feel me? And you just intimidated. By the time you go through the whole intake and everything, you know, I had a little hair then, you feel me? So they shave your hair off and everything. So you go inside the dorm, then you like, damn, it's here, right? And I think I see my first fight like the second day or something like that. Then it's like, okay, man. Then I see my first stabbing like the following week. You know, throughout the 9-year bid, I end up seeing somebody get killed. Somebody got raped. I've seen, you know, gang initiations. I've seen all that dumb stuff. You know what I'm saying? I've seen COs get it. You feel me? I've seen COs get checked. You feel me? So everything that you see in the movies, for the most part, I would say is real. Some of the movies is, you know, they dramatize it too much, but prison is definitely a messed up place. I wouldn't recommend it for anybody, but it depends on the individual because it can make or break you. You go in there with the BS, they're going to give you everything that you're looking for. But if you go in there wanting to change your life, there is a window. May not be as big, but there is a window where you can change your life up in there too.